You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to New Wisco Weekend for the weekend of July 26th and 27th. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Hopefully you're noticing some active essential insects in your yard or garden right now. I'm talking about bees. Researchers are reporting a loss of bees across Wisconsin this year. The food supply could face challenges as bees are one of the primary pollinators for crops, fruit trees, and various garden goodies. This week, we're taking a closer look at these small but mighty insects. Our cover story shares what it's like to be a beekeeper. We'll get the buzz from Wayne Stiegelman, the owner of A-Frame Acres and a beekeeping expert in Brown County. Also, Melissa Kay has an interview with the owner of a cranberry bog, and she reveals the importance of bees for her operation. We're pretty sure Amanda Nimmer will make you smile with a song that's sure to stick in your mind this weekend. And EAA is wrapping up in Oshkosh. Our Brittany Merlot has been on the grounds all week, so we'll hear from her. Pete Schwabba has a classic cinema pick of the week with several strong Wisconsin connections. And speaking of Pete, our musical guest is the Piatt family. They joined the Nightlight with Pete Schwabba show to talk about a very important Northeast Wisconsin fundraiser supporting musicians and cancer patients. And we'll have the information for you later in our show. Why are bees important? And what would happen if bees disappeared? Terry Barr opens up the issue of New Wisco Weekend by asking those who might be most impacted in the future, the kids. Here's Terry.
It's a typical summer day with kids out on their bikes and scooters. There are a few girls, Ella, Maddie, and Maeve. They range in age from 10 to 12. And we see them exploring, then researching whatever they find, from something left behind on recycling day to a new plant or flower. So when I ask them about the bees, their exploring and researching is not a surprise.
The simplest answer of how bees are important is that bees pollinate food crops. Pollination occurs when insects like bees and other pollinators travel from one plant to the next, fertilizing the plant.
So what do you think that means? Are bees important?
Because that keeps, like, they help our ecosystem,
yes,
our food security, and some aspects of human health.
Do you remember the last time you saw a bee?
Like 2 days ago?
Oh, you did. Oh, that's perfect, Ella. I'm talking now to Maddie, and Maddie's going to tell me why she thinks bees are important.
I think bees are important because they pollinate. How they pollinate is they get pollen on them, and then they fly around, and the bees, and the pollen goes on the ground, and the pollen grows into a plant. Oh, and even are important for humans. Male bumblebees do not sting. Female bumblebees sting because they have to protect their nest.
Do you see many bees around?
Sometimes down like by the park and over there.
Okay. Really, for you, when you think of a bee, why do you think it's important beyond everything that you read about it?
Because they're important because they help us like make food and stuff, like they plant food.
That's great. Awesome job. Anything else
and
you want to?
They make honey.
They do make honey, and honey's so good, isn't it? Okay, so I'm talking now with Maeve, and Maeve's going to tell me what she knows about the bees. What do bees mean to you? Why are they important to have around?
Because, one, if bees died, all of them just poofed out of existence. All of our crops or flowers and fruits and vegetables and trees and all the life thingies would die because the bees and other pollination critters all help, yep, pollinate the flowers. But basically, they go into the flower,
mm-hmm,
and they try to get the nectar because that's what makes honey. But they accidentally get like pollen on them, and then they go to the next flower and get nectar, and then they get the pollen on the other flower.
Which is pretty cool, isn't it?
And then it makes seeds.
Yep.
And then seeds make more flowers.
So we need to be nice to the bees.
Yeah. Because we're going to die if we don't be nice to the bees.
Here at New Wisco Weekend, when we put together topics like beekeeping, we kind of wonder just where Amanda Nimmer is going to go. Well, let me tell you, she does not disappoint with this week's commentary. Here's Amanda Nimmer with a bit of a song that's going to get stuck in your brain.
Here's a fun fact. You know the children's song, "I'm Bringing Home a Baby Bumblebee"? You know, "I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee. Choir people don't come for me. I was an alto." But you know the song. It's an earworm that gets into your head. You might be singing it to your kids now. You might be singing it to your niece and nephews. You definitely sang it in preschool, at least. It's a children's song. But did you know that this simple children's song, don't worry, it's nothing nefarious, was developed as a different version for the Arkansas State song? What in the world does Arkansas have to do with bees? Well, I've been going down a rabbit hole. And while it's not exactly 100% certain how this version came from it, there are some facts that line up. For instance, this song originated around the mid-1800s. They think that the first time the music was printed for this was actually in 1847. The song, known as the Arkansas Traveler, was made popular thanks to an American singer and guitarist named Mose Case, which was based on a piece of music by Sanford C. Faulkner. So there's a lot of merging together here. So this song became Arkansas's state, the official state song of Arkansas from 1949 to 1963. And then in 87, it's been the state's historic song ever since. But there's so many different versions of it. All go to that same tune, you know, the ba-dum-bum. Again, I'm in alto. But they all tell a funny story, just something silly. Like, for instance, here's some lyrics from the first one from 1947. "Far and far away down in Arkansas, there lived a squatter with a stubborn jaw. His nose was ruby red and his whiskers gray, and he would sit and fiddle all night and all day." And then there's a Peter Pan version. "Oh, once upon a time in Arkansas, an old man sat in his little cabin door and fiddled at a tune that he'd like to hear, a jolly old tune that he played by ear." Then there's an Albert Bigelow Paine's version, which was the first one that was taught to children in the northern parts of the United States. I personally have never heard of it. "Oh, 'twas down in the woods of Arkansas, and the night was cloudy and the wind was raw, and he didn't have a bed, and he didn't have a bite, and if he hadn't fiddled, he'd a-traveled all night." There's more to it. I'm not going through all the lyrics, guys. But then, somehow, we go from talking about fiddling to a bee. And that's where the disconnect is. It's in the history that this song is 100% a part of the Arkansas Traveler. It's a version of it. The traditional version being, "I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee. Won't my mommy be so proud of me?" And then the bee stings the child and he has to deal with the aftermath. Now, most people don't really talk about the squishing up and the licking up and the throwing up and the wiping up. They've changed the lyrics here and there, but that was the traditional one that I definitely learned. But all of these lyrics that I have just quickly gone through, which, by the way, are small portions of these bigger songs, were, yes, part of the Arkansas Traveler, the official state song of Arkansas, and is now its historic song. And they all go to that tune. Ba-dum, 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 bum, bum. It's kind of cool. Anyway, that's all I got for you guys this week, because, quite frankly, you're hearing some pretty cool facts about bees. So from New Wisco Weekend, I'm Amanda Nimmer, and there you go. Save the bees. Be nice. Be nice.
In this issue of New Wisco Weekend, we're talking about bees and beekeeping. A little bit later on in our cover story, we'll have an interview with Wayne Stiegelman of A-Frames Acres on his job of keeping bees and selling honey. But while someone like Wayne is farming bees for their honey, other farmers need the bees for their crops. Melissa Kay talked with a cranberry producer on just how important bees are for her operation.
I'm Melissa Kay, and I'm here at Glacial Lake Cranberries with Mary Brazel Brown, and I'd like to speak with you a little bit about how bees help your cranberry marshes.
Well, every year we bring in bees for pollination. Pollination is usually the middle of June through the middle of July, obviously dependent on the weather. But we bring in about 1,000 hives and about a hive and a half per acre of cranberries. And cranberries are not self-pollinating, so we depend on bees and natural pollinators and wind and rain, a lot of things to distribute the pollen, so to pollinate the plants. So they're critical to our cultural practices.
And when you bring these bees in, where do they come from?
Well, they'll where we're getting them now, I believe they're coming up from Florida. These beekeepers use their bees on any number of crops, you know, not just cranberries, but they'll do almonds, they'll do wheat, they'll do whoever needs pollination. So I can't tell you exactly where their stop was right before they got here, but they were hungry when they got here. So
that is fascinating. So these are like just traveling hives of bees come around?
Apiarius, we bring them in, or they bring them in by semi-load, and they're stacked on a semi, and they're netted. They have these huge nets over them, and then they come in the wee hours of the morning when the bees are sleeping, and they fog the hives, and then they have these little bobcats that take the pallets off and place them strategically around the marsh. It's quite fascinating.
And then how long do they stay?
Depending on the weather, they're here a good month for sure.
Okay, and then that's what makes your cranberries then able to produce, your cranberry bogs to produce cranberries.
Right, well, that pollinates the blossoms, which creates the fruit.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for talking with me today, Mary.
You're welcome, Melissa. Thanks for asking.
For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Melissa Kay.
The sound of New Wisco this week is that of airplanes. Here's Brittany Merlot.
It's Air Venture Week in Oshkosh, and EAA stands for Experimental Aircraft Association, which means building your own plane. Built by individuals for education and recreation, it's called Home Built.
Then I decided I wanted to go faster, and so I decided I was going to build this.
That's Kent Ingram. He's from Nebraska and started flying back in 82 while he was still in high school between his junior and senior year. Now, his bucket list is fulfilled. He built his own airplane.
Well, I'd always wanted to build one. I'm very mechanically minded. And
purchasing his kit from Rands, about 90 miles away from him, he started building it during COVID in 2020.
An airplane's just like a house. You make it look like a house really quick, but then the finish work takes a long time. And anytime you do something like an airplane project, it's just like going to college you're just intensely learning on a project of how the system, and I have a brother that's an AMP, so I'm pretty familiar with it, but still did a lot of learning and building, and it's just, I like hands-on stuff.
Yeah. A lot of work, time, and money. I asked him, was it worth it?
Actually, the most difficult parts is the electronic, the panel part, because I'm flying a PA-11 Cub, which has a airspeed indicator and a compass and an altimeter. To a glass panel with an autopilot, and I still haven't tackled all that yet.
A Texas music nut. He said he'll be headed south soon with it.
It's a lot of fun. It'll be a good traveling airplane.
Hosting plenty of home-built exhibits right here in Oshkosh this week.
I guess it's retirement eventually.
Brittany will be back a little bit later in the hour to tell us about the volunteers of EAA. When we come back, more from EAA and our cover story with a beekeeper. But first, have you ever considered how many flowers a bee can pollinate in one day? It's more than 5,000. But consider this. To make 1 pound of honey, a hive of bees needs to visit 2 million flowers. Thank you to the very busy bees. This is New Wisco Weekend.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
You're listening to New Wisco Weekend on WGBW and WISS. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. We're happy to have you here with us. And here's what's still ahead. Without volunteers, EAA would not be the experience it is. But first, let's get things straight with Peach Prabha's Classic Movie Pick of the Week.
Wisco Weekend presents Pete Schwabba's Classic Movie Pick of the Week.
This week's classic pick lets us follow a road trip from Lawrence, Iowa to Mount Zion, Wisconsin. That might not sound like an ambitious trek, but it is when your sweet ride is a John Deere lawnmower. The film is David Lynch's The Strait Story. The story is about Strait, Alvin Strait that is, a World War II veteran and widower who doesn't walk well or see well and doesn't have a driver's license. In order to see his ailing brother, who he learns has had a stroke, he purchases an old John Deere and hits the road, hoping to see his brother Lyle and make amends before either one of them passes away. Alvin risks his life while riding the shoulder of the highway for 370 miles to do so. Our leading man pulls a small trailer behind him and camps out at night under the stars, encountering interesting characters along the way, including a pregnant runaway, a group of Iowa townies who do everything they can to help Alvin, and two brothers who argue like brothers while fixing Alvin's wheels. The siblings learn a lesson about brothers from the man trying to reconnect with his own after a falling out led to their estrangement 10 years earlier.
Thanks to you boys, I'm gonna get this rig back on the road. I've drove it all the way across Iowa, and I'm hoping it holds on till I get to Wisconsin. My brother lives there. I haven't seen him in 10 years. There's no one knows your life better than a brother that's near your age. He knows who you are and what you are better than anyone on earth. My brother and I said some unforgivable things the last time we met, but I'm trying to put that behind me. And this trip is a hard swallow of my pride. I just hope I'm not too late.
Fun film fact, the brothers in the scene that Alvin imparts his wisdom on are native Wisconsinites Kevin and John Farley, brothers of Chris. Richard Farnsworth had a solid career of playing older, weathered, wise characters, sort of a more soft-spoken Sam Elliott. He started his career as a stuntman and transitioned to acting, gaining lots of attention for smaller roles before landing roles in films like Misery and The Natural. It seems Richard Farnsworth had so much heart in his eyes and his voice, they had to find someone to fill his stunt shoes. By the time he passed away in 2000, at the age of 80, he was a twice Oscar-nominated actor, one for Best Supporting Actor for Comes a Horseman and one for Best Actor in The Strait Story. Farnsworth did win an Independent Spirit Award for Best Actor that same year. The cast also includes Sissy Spacek, who plays Alvin's mentally disabled daughter, and Harry Dean Stanton, who plays his brother Lyle. This was a bit of a departure for David Lynch and a testament to his greatness as a filmmaker in that The Strait Story is not the least bit edgy and rated G. It was Roger Ebert's favorite Lynch film. Aside from its location, the film also has a strong Wisconsin connection in that screenwriters Mary Sweeney and John Roach are native Wisconsinites who had been friends since their high school days in Madison. Roach was an accomplished TV producer, and Sweeney made a name for herself as an editor and producer after working with Lynch on Blue Velvet, Wild at Heart, Twin Peaks, and Lost Highway. Earlier this week on Nightlight, John Roach said that Sweeney reached out to him to see if he would want to write a script with her as she was trying to broaden her horizons as an artist. Not a bad first effort when David Lynch wants to direct your material. In 2009, Sweeney added directing to her resume with the film Baraboo. Roach is the creative force behind a riveting documentary called A Road at Night. If you're wondering where Sweeney and Roach looked for inspiration for this film, The Strait Story is based on a true story about the real Alvin Strait, who made his journey in 1993 on the actual highway the film was shot on. And what would a classic pick be without a few fun film facts? It's hard to imagine anybody else playing the role of Alvin Strait, but there were other big-time actors considered, including Jack Lemmon and Gregory Peck. Usually, a studio or production company likes to include all kinds of added features for a DVD or digital release. The Strait Story released only the movie in the trailer, and that is how David Lynch wanted it. He shot the film in sequence and wanted it to be viewed as one whole experience for the viewer. This might surprise you, but Lynch called The Strait Story his most experimental movie. Farnsworth was hesitant to take the role of Strait at first because of all the swearing in Blue Velvet. Lynch had to assure the actor that there was no swearing. The Strait Story puts the heart in Heartland. It is brilliantly written, executed, and performed, and is quite possibly one of the sweetest films you will ever see. And it's this week's Classic Movie Pick of the Week. For more movie and entertainment talk, join me weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. for Nightlight here on WISS and WGBW. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Pete Schwabba.
The biggest event in New Wisco this week has, of course, been the EAA Air Venture 2025 fly-in. And our meteorologist, Brittany Merlot, has been on the grounds all week.
Volunteers arrive from all over the world in Oshkosh in early July, all for EAA Air Venture.
I love it. This is my gosh, 10th year volunteering. I want to give back because this is my 31st year at Oshkosh.
That's Chuck Holderness, who volunteers at the admission gate.
I flew in the Bonanzas to Oshkosh 31 years ago, and I've done it every year since. It's unbelievable. We set the world record for the world's largest civilian formation flight. We had 133 of us 1 year, and then we actually had 149 another year, but we didn't go through all the paperwork to break the record. This year, we had 119 of us. So we're all on the runway at the same time, 3 abreast, 5 feet from my prop to the tail in front of me. It's exciting.
And Donna, at security, her daughter is a 148th fighter wing pilot. But it's more than that that brings her here from Port Washington.
It's the meeting the people. You meet them from all over the world, basically, and mingling with them and making new friends.
Often described as a family reunion, even if you aren't a pilot, all are welcome.
I've made friends already from Mississippi, from Arizona, from around this area, and we camp with them because I also camp here. And it's just family friendly over there, and thousands of people camping, and there's very seldom any issues.
Camp Scholar, a field of friends, volunteers, pilots, and more. No electricity and no problems, even in the summer heat of July. 40,000 camp here in this 1 week. Anyone can volunteer, even if you don't have any background in aviation. Here's Dan Van Evenhoven.
You can drive the tram, which is kind of cool because you get to see the entire grounds and you get to explain to people what different things are going on in different locations.
For Civic Media News, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
We're just moments away from our new Wisco Weekend cover story with a beekeeping expert. And you can bet it's the bee's knees. But did you know that the State Department of Natural Resources reports that there are more than 400 species of native bees in Wisconsin? That's a big deal, and more than most states across the country. We'll be back right after the news. This is New Wisco Weekend, and we come now to the portion of our show that we call our cover story. Today, we're going to talk with Wayne Stiegelman. He's the owner of A-Frame Acres and is considered a beekeeper extraordinaire throughout Brown County.
Well, I'm a beekeeper, so I'm part of Brown County Beekeepers Association. I do our social media and technology. I'm part of the leadership team. And then I help with all the education with the new beekeepers and everything. So that's what I do for Brown County Beekeepers. And then A-Frame Acres is just my homestead that, you know, I do the beekeeping at, and I sell the honey out of.
How important are bees to our food supply?
Well, bees are very important. So without bees, we wouldn't have as much variety of fruits and vegetables and nuts that we do now. So for every 3 bites of food, bees are responsible for pollinating. So 70% of our crops, we need the honeybees and native pollinators to do their job. For human consumption, there just isn't enough native pollinators to go around. So therefore, that's where the workhorse, the honeybees, come in, that we use to pollinate crops such as blueberries and almonds and everything like that, that, you know, is part of industrial agriculture. So they're very important if we want to sustain, you know, the variety of our food for our population.
Now, we talked with a cranberry grower earlier in the show, and they bring in hives from other places and set them out to do the pollinating. Is that the type of thing that you will do at A-Frame Acres, or are you strictly a honeybee to get the honey kind of farmer?
So in the honeybee industry, there's 3 different types of beekeepers that are labeled. So you have your commercial beekeeper that makes their living solely off of their honeybees, and they can make money from honey. they can make money from selling bees, and then they can make money by pollination. So that's the commercial category. Then you have the sideliner, which is the beekeeper that is not making their sole living from honeybees, but they're making an income. And what a sideliner generally does is they don't necessarily move their bees around like the commercial guys. They'll have them set, put somewhere, and then their main income generally is off of selling honey and a little bit off of selling bees and queens and so forth. And then you have your hobbyist, which is just solely a hobbyist. They'll have 2 to 3 hives in their backyard, just for fun, for helping to pollinate their local environment and so forth. So I consider myself not necessarily a sideliner, but I just call me a crazy hobbyist, because I'm somewhere in the middle of a hobbyist and a sideliner.
You're somewhat in the middle, but you are like, I know that many times you are the one people go to when they have questions about bees.
My whole drive with the honeybees is really just, I'm fascinated with them. When I first got into beekeeping, I came in as a hobbyist, and my wife enjoys baking and cooking. We're kind of a homestead type of situation. My dad had bees when he was younger. So then I said, hey, I might as well start beekeeping, and I can have, we can get our honey. We've got chickens, we have gardens and everything. So that's how I started. And then as I kind of went through my first 2 or 3 years, I really started to understand the problems of keeping bees, and it goes pretty deep. And to be sustainable, I had to figure out ways to manage my bees to, keep them thriving and going. So I turned to technology where I can monitor my bees with temperature and humidity and scales. And the reason is because, beekeeping really hasn't changed since 1852, really, going back that far. Before that, beekeeping really was just, pulling them out of trees and containers and destroying the hive to get the honey. Well, fast forward, well over 100 years, beekeepers are doing the same thing. And it's really an old art trade. So I use technology in my current job. And so I looked into it, and there's a company in Stoughton that makes sensors to go into hives. They're kind of a starting company and everything. And that's where I turned to. And that's, so I kind of switched over to trying to educate the hobbyists, saying, hey, if you want to continue in a sustainable manner, we need to look at these diseases. And what I do is I try to take the current problem and then really try to be the voice of the industry and say, okay, what's the solution? And of course, like any agriculture, you run into roadblocks, but I see the problems, and instead of just being quiet and dealing with them, I try to figure it out and then get the answers and then come back to our members and other beekeepers and say, this is the current solution. This is what's recommended. I've tried this. This is what works. This is what doesn't work. So that's where I sit as a beekeeper in the local industry.
How many hives do you have?
I have 16 hives, and that can go up and down. So in the future, I'm trying to get, if you wanted to categorize a sideliner, sideliners generally have around 50 plus hives, 50 to a couple hundred hives. The commercial beekeepers, they'll run, a few hundred to a few thousand or more. I'm trying to get to the point to where I can make a living off beekeeping, so that can be my occupation. But to get there, I have to be careful because, I don't have the money just to go and buy 100 hives from a commercial guy and start. And even if you do that, you're buying problems. So I'm trying to grow it organically and create my own stock of bees, making sure that my own comb is mine, it's not diseased and so forth. So by taking that route, I can, of course I'm running into a lot of obstacles, but then I learn from that. And then I'm trying to help other beekeepers, I'm trying to, so they don't don't have to reinvent the wheel, right? Because really, beekeeping, it's a very secretive occupation. Beekeepers don't talk. They're like fishermen and huntermen.
Now, we hear a lot of talk when we're talking about bees about how they're disappearing.
Well, you have two different categories if you're talking bees. You have your native bees that are just naturally out in nature doing their thing, pollinating. And then you have the honeybees. And honeybees are actually considered managed livestock by the USDA. So the issue is, what happened was a parasite came in 1987, and it's called the Varroa destructor. It's a mite that gets into the hives, and they grow exponentially. And what happens is the mites, they look like a little tiny wood tick. And how they reproduce is they'll ride the worker bees in the hive. And then right before the worker bees cap their larva, the female will jump into that cell, and then she'll reproduce, and then two or three mites will come out as the adult bee comes out. So they can repopulate faster than the bees. The mites don't kill the bees, but they're a vector of viruses and diseases.
Gotcha.
So if we don't keep them controlled, then that's where it's unsustainable for honeybees. And so for honeybees out feral honeybees, mm-hmm. they have the same issues, but the survivors, the benefit is they are adapting to it. The native pollinators, and this is what we try to teach for responsible beekeeping. You can't have a lot of bees in one area, because then your honeybees are competing with your native bees. So it's not the bees in general that are disappearing, it's the honeybees that are constantly going up and down in population. Because remember when I talked about the commercial people, mm-hmm. they have pollination services, so they'll literally load their hives on a truck, send them out to California to pollinate the almonds, and then send them back, you know, once that's over, and then the winter's over here, and that's nationwide. So the problem is you have this livestock that it in itself is a vector that's being pushed around the United States and the world. And if they get a parasite or a disease, then that's spread all over. And that's the struggle that beekeeping is having. So the managed bees, if an apiary, you know, of 100 hives gets a disease or gets infected by mites, most likely all those hives are. So what you're hearing in the news is mostly coming from the commercial, because, you know, they're running a couple thousand hives, and, you know, they're using treatments that are becoming resistant to the mites, and then they'll lose, you know, like this year, 62% was the loss for commercial beekeepers. For hobbyists, it's not that far off. It's about 50% to 40%. So that's why I always, that's where I say sustainability. If you were to manage a dairy herd and you were losing 50% of your cows every year, it's not sustainable. That's right. The struggle that beekeeping is having right now. There's so many diseases, and there's so many pressures on the honeybees from, you know, the pesticides that are being sprayed on the field, the herbicides and the fungicides. That's one thing. The other thing is just the lack of forage. You know, as we grow as a population, and just like where I live, there's fields every year being sold and then developed into residential areas. Well, that's pasture that's being taken away. You have clover, you have goldenrod, you have all these really great plants that not only the honeybees, but the native pollinators can feed off of, that's taken away and now just turned into green lawn space. So as a individual, if you're saying I see a lot less honeybees, well, any animal, any insect, they're going to go where the food is. So if your yard is pretty sterile, meaning you just have bushes in a very, you know, manicured lawn. Mm-hmm. Why would you have pollinators there? There's nothing there for them. So, you know, as society, what we need to do, and I tell people, you know, you can still have your manicured lawn, you know, but we need to think about, you know, how we work in this whole ecosystem. You know, plant a crabapple tree, plant flowering bushes in your yard, and then guess what? All of a sudden, you're going to see the bumblebees come back, and you see the mason bees come back because there's forage for them to feed.
So, Wayne, let me ask you this as we're wrapping up. Is there a place where people can go to learn more about either beekeeping or about A-Frame Acres?
Oh, absolutely. So if they come to A-Frame Acres, I live out in Suamico, and I have a Facebook page that I put videos on and try to educate people. They can just go to A-Frame Acres on Facebook, and you'll see me there. So if they work, and I have a self-service honey stand, so when they come out to my house, if I'm out there, I will teach them. I can even show them the hives. And being a big advocate of Brown County beekeepers, I have that information there. The other resource that I would really recommend is going to our website, browncountybeekeepers.com. And we have monthly meetings at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. We do lots of fun events. We educate. And so that's really, truly where I'd recommend if they want to learn more is go to browncountybeekeepers.com.
Wayne, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about this.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
This is New Wisco Weekend. Coming up, music from the PI. Family.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale. On Stage for Cancer is a fundraising event coming up Thursday, July 31st at the Riverside Ballroom in Green Bay to benefit Dennis Peters of the Glam Band, a member of the Green Bay music scene who's battling pancreatic cancer. The Piat family, Chris, Paul, and Elliot, recently appeared on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba to discuss the event and share their music. Here's the Piat family.
You'll remember me when the west wind moves upon the fields of barley. You'll forget the sun in its jealous sky as we walk in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while upon the fields of barley. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold. Will you stay with me? Will you be my love among the fields of barley? Forget the sun in its jealous sky as we lie in fields of gold. See the west wind move like a lover's soul upon the fields of barley. Feel her body rise as you kiss her mouth among the fields of gold. I never made promises lightly, and there have been some that I've broken, but I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
We've got live entertainment in the studio with the Piat family, who are here talking about On Stage for Cancer, which I will tell you a little more about. It's coming up in just a couple of weeks. Christine, Paul, and their son, Elliot, who has a mandolin, which is so cool. We heard Fields of Gold before. So On Stage for Cancer takes place July 31st at the Riverside Ballroom here in Green Bay from 6 to 8 p.m. And this is so great. This year's beneficiary is Dennis Peters, who is the leader of the glam band and a multi-whammy winner. We wish him well, and it's so great that you guys are helping out with On Stage for Cancer. So what else can people expect at this year's event?
I'll give you some of the song titles, and we'll see if you can figure out, like, the theme.
All right.
Chicken Fried, Zach Brown, Chicken Fried.
Okay.
9 to 5 by Dolly Parton.
Okay.
Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Cracklin' Rosie.
I believe you have me singing Margaritaville.
Margaritaville.
I get to put on some flip flops.
That's a
my
great
favorite
one.
Things.
A few of my favorite things, like Julie Andrews. Few,
but it's a super cool jazzy version.
I am not seeing a theme here.
Food and drink.
There is a food or drink reference, I think, in every
song. But what does she say in 9 to 5? What's the Dolly Parton?
Stumble to the kitchen and you pour a cup of ambition.
Ambition. Mm-hmm. Which either could be a gin and tonic or coffee. Exactly. I always assumed it was coffee.
Just how much ambition do you need? Yeah. That's really what it is. Is it hair of the dog or do you just need coffee?
Exactly. You know? I would love to hear you guys play something else.
Yeah, we're going to do Landslide by Fleetwood Mac.
Love it. This is the Piat family, Christine, Paul, and Elliot. And Elliot is featured tonight, so take it away whenever you're ready.
Making the kids work a little bit.
Took my love and I took it down. I climbed the mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in snow-covered hills till the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can the child within my heart rise above? Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my afraid of changing, 'cause I build my life around you. But time makes you bolder, even children get older, and I'm getting older too. Afraid of changing, 'cause I build my life around you. But time makes you bolder, even children get older, and I'm getting older too.
Thank you for being a part of New Wisco Weekend, our look at bees and beekeeping in Northeast Wisconsin. New Wisco Weekend is produced and directed by Lisa Hale, written by our lead correspondent Terry Barr and Lisa Hale, with features from Melissa Kay, Brittany Merlot, Pete Schwaba, and commentator Amanda Nimmer. If you have a story you'd like to hear covered, please feel free to email me anytime. My email address is lisa.hale@civicmedia.us. I'm Civic Media Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for WISS and WGBW News. Be unstoppable.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.